Welcome into another edition of NBA Sound System. It's NBA Draft Week, and I am joined once again by my guy and the Sporting News NBA Draft Analyst, Kyle Irving. How you feeling, man? Biggest week of the year.
Biggest week of the year. I can't believe it's already here. I'm looking forward to it. Thursday can't come soon enough. We've already seen, you know, plenty of smoke screens and intel and who's working out with who and who's trying to trade up, who's trying to trade back. It sounds like it's going to be a busy draft week. We kicked it off with already having a huge trade on Sunday that I know we're going to get to, but you know, the draft itself, I cannot wait. Thursday can't come soon enough.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, we talk about how big this draft week is, and of course, in NBA fashion, there's just been so much news to get us prepared for. It started last Friday. First off, the NBA finally comes down with the suspension for Ja Morant. Then there was a trade you mentioned, and obviously we'll get to the NBA draft because we have a lot to talk about with the draft. But before we get to that, I guess we do start with Ja Morant suspended for the first 25 games of the upcoming season. You and I talked about it a little bit, what it meant for him moving forward. And now that we know what's going on and he's taking responsibility and apologized for his actions once again. But looking at it from a basketball perspective, what does this mean for the Grizzlies? They finished second in the West last year. Now they're without their best player for 25 games. What do you think?
Well, first off, I feel like the NBA missed the mark on the suspension.
So?
And I don't know if you feel the same way. Like, 25 games just does not seem like it's enough to me. And I know, like, there's the reports floating around that, like, the media is out to get Ja Morant. I promise I'm not out to get Ja Morant. It's more so just like, you know, having to, you know, serve the penalty for the actions that you've, you know, presented yourself with. I mean, this was not a first offense. It's a second offense. He had already missed time during the season this past year. I just don't really think it sends the right message. But, you know, 25 games is 25 games. It's still a big chunk of the season. The Grizzlies are going to have to try and find a way to work around without having their franchise player. We've seen them play well without Ja Morant in the past, but Tyus Jones, I believe, is a free agent. So, you know,
contract year for him.
Yeah. Contract year for Tyus Jones. So, you know, I mean, that's someone that stepped up in a big way in the past when Ja Morant was out. Desmond Bane, someone else who has also stepped up in the past when Ja Morant was out. So, you know, I actually believe that the Grizzlies are going to work around this and they're going to find a way to stay afloat during those 25 games. But I really thought it was going to be a 50 game suspension for Ja.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because the way that the Adam Silver was like, you know, we don't want to announce this during the finals. We don't want to take away from the finals. It felt like it was going to be something that was at least half the season or more. 25 games is still really significant, but it's just not exactly what I was expecting. That being said, it's going to impact the team a lot. He's not going to be around for 25 games. He's going to lose around $8 million with that, which is significant amount of money. And also, he's ineligible to finish all NBA because now the new threshold, you have to play a minimum of 65 games. So from that perspective, it does have a longer term impact. But like you mentioned, he served an 8-game suspension last year. It is a second offense. And it was just so ominous what we saw beforehand. I was a little surprised. They could have announced that during the finals. Like, nobody would have batted an eye. Nobody would have been distracted by that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when Adam Silver said that, I think it kind of put the worst case scenario in everybody's head.
Right.
Like, at that point, I was almost wondering, is 50 games even going to be the number? Like, I thought maybe it was going to be a year long suspension. Just the way that he framed it, it kind of set, you know, it just made it an underwhelming announcement when they actually came out with the 25 games. But hey, the 25 games is what it is. I hope that Ja Morant gets the help that he needs because he's one of the most, you know, on the court, one of the most electrifying talents the NBA has to offer. The NBA is a better place when he is on the floor playing. And, you know, once he gets back from that 25 game suspension, I really hope that, you know, basketball is at the top of his mind because when it is, he's one of the best players the NBA has.
Yeah, 100%. Last time we said we hope it's the last time, and this time, again, we hope it's the last time. 25 game suspension. He bounces back from it and we don't talk about anything like this ever again. That's the ideal thing. So we'll see. Now, that was Friday. It kind of set us up, you know, also on Friday, the Charlotte Hornets are going to be sold officially. So that was another thing that happened on Friday as well, which kind of got swept under the rug because on Sunday, we're just kind of just chilling. And then news comes in that Bradley Beal is on the move to Phoenix. In a deal that centered around Chris Paul, who's headed to Washington, probably not going to stay in Washington, might get bought out, might get rerouted to L.A., also included in the deal, Landry Shamet and some picks to the Wizards, Jordan Goodwin and Isaiah Todd to the Suns. Thoughts about Bradley Beal and the value of the Sun?
I feel like it kind of got like blown out of proportion, like that the Suns, you know, they still need a bench and this and that. It's like, well, they got better without a doubt by trading for Bradley Beal. Like, there's no arguing that. You know, they were going to have to fill out their bench no matter what. And it was going to be like cap gymnastics in order to make it happen to put, you know, comparable players around Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. They went and got a player that is better than anybody they could have gotten in free agency. Bradley Beal is obviously an amazing talent. It's just, you know, a curious fit because now you have three players who do a lot of the same things. Yeah. I'm interested to see Devin Booker kind of take over that point guard role full time. At least like that's the way that it's lining up with the, you know, current five guys that they have on their roster. But you know, he was an incredible playmaker once Kevin Durant, came along and joined the Suns at the trade deadline. You know, I think that he still could play point guard because he is such an incredible playmaker. But you know, they're going to have to find the right veterans to piece that roster together, because as we saw with the Nuggets this past year, it takes more than just the stars on your roster to complete a championship team. They're going to have to find some rotation pieces that can actually contribute alongside Durant, Booker, and Beal.
Yeah, keying in on Bradley Beal real quick. Do you think that the narrative around him has gotten a little unfair? I think, you know, this past season he averaged 23 points, five assists, 3.9 rebounds per game, played 50 games. The Wizards just have not been a good team. So obviously they're not going to win very much. Bradley Beal will be 30 this summer, but a big three of Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker, and also DeAndre Ayton is still on contract with the Suns right now. Those four guys, $162 million of cap space alone, which is wild to say out loud, especially considering what the salary cap is. But as far as Bradley Beal as a player, I think that people are kind of sleeping on what he brings to the table.
Yeah, I completely agree. He's also a better playmaker than I think people give him credit for. Like, you know, he led the league in scoring that one year. He averaged 30 points per game. Like, you know, that's kind of his MO. Everyone sees Bradley Beal as like strictly a scorer, but you know, he's a pretty good playmaker as well. And so is Kevin Durant. So that's three guys that, even though scoring is their, you know, kind of featured skill set, they're all three of them are capable of making plays for others and elevating their teammates around them. So I do think that, you know, the scale is kind of tipped a little bit too far on Bradley Beal being a one-dimensional player and, oh, how much better does he really make the Suns? Like, he makes the Suns a lot better. But on the flip side of this, like, I really have no idea what the Wizards are doing. They got no valuable assets in return by any means, no first-round picks. I understand they're held hostage a little bit by the no-trade clause thing. Yeah. And, you know, we might have seen our last no-trade clause in a long time in the NBA after the way this unfolded. But, you know, if you're the Wizards, like, how do you not get – and I know the Suns didn't have a lot of picks to give up because of, you know, how much they had to give up to get Durant, but like, you don't get one first round pick. You don't get one asset that is like, you know, valuable to moving your franchise forward. I mean, complete miss by the Wizards and the Suns, you know, just trying to get the best player available that they, you know, could possibly add to that roster.
Yeah, you mentioned that no trade clause. I actually wrote about that over at the Sporting News. There have been over 5,000 players that have played in the NBA and NBA history, and only 10 ever have had a true no trade clause like Bradley Beal just had. So 99.9% of every NBA player ever has not had the contract that Bradley Beal has. So he was able to really control his fate, and the Wizards were not able to get much of a return for that. Now, there's some domino effects from that trade. I'll just mention that real quick when we can get to NBA draft talk. But one, what does this mean for Chris Paul? What do you think he will land? And then the other star who might be on the move, who we don't know, but what do you think that does for the market for Damian Lillard if he were to be moving forward?
I do love the idea of a Chris Paul reunion with the Clippers. I mean, while they're at it, why not just bring DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin back too, and just bring all Lob City just, you know, at the back end of their careers, because I think both those guys are free agents as well. But no, I really do like the potential of him landing with the Clippers. I mean, they need a point guard. I still don't know what they plan on doing with Russell Westbrook. I know Paul George has been a huge advocate of bringing Russ back. But I mean, as crazy as it is to say, like, there is enough room on that roster for both of them because they just need point guards through and through. So, you know, if whether he ends up with the Clippers or another contender, I'm excited to see where Chris Paul ends up next, because even though he's a shell of himself, and I know you're as big of a fan of him, I mean, you're one of Chris Paul's biggest fans out there. I'm also a fan of Chris Paul in a big way. And even though he's a shell of himself, I still feel like in a reduced role, he can still help a team compete for a championship. As that goes for Damian Lillard, I mean, Miami, if he could end up there, that is a dangerous destination for the rest of the Eastern Conference. I don't mind Miami waiting on Lillard. It's just going to be, you know, if you're a Heat fan, that's going to be tough if you miss out on both these guys. Let's say Dame decides to stay in Portland and you missed out on Bradley Beal, then, you know, you're kind of searching for that extra star and, you know, what strings can Pat Riley pull to try and get another star alongside Bam and Jimmy Butler. But, you know, I don't mind the patience, because Damian Lillard to me is an even better fit than Bradley Beal would have been a good fit in Miami. If they could get Dame, they're flirting with becoming, you know, the favorites to win the Eastern Conference next year. So I don't mind the patience there. I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree. And I think the biggest thing is the big if with, is Dame actually really going to want to be gone. And mm-hmm. the Trailblazers are really aggressively trying to add another star to put around him. And I know, again, I think that the scales have kind of tipped a little bit because Dame Lillard did have one of the best seasons of his career last year. And a lot of the games he missed was because they were tanking and trying to get an asset. They're trying to get the first pick, but now they're trying to trade the third pick to help him. And by the time you hear this, they might have done that. So it's hard to just really bank on whether or not, you know, Dame would actually want to leave. So I think that that's a big risk. But it's kind of a risk you're willing to take. Like you said, you know, they went to the finals without having that roster, and obviously they didn't have enough to win, and I don't think they'll have enough to get back to the finals. But it's a risk you have to be willing to take. I'm not going to be the one that doubts Pat Riley's strategy when it comes to roster building, because the proof kind of speaks for itself. That being said, we talked about what could happen with the third pick that Portland has, and I think the fun thing as we go into this draft process, really only know for certain the first pick. So I know we've talked a lot about Victor Wembanyama after the Spurs won the lottery. We talked about what that meant for him and for this franchise. And now the moment is actually here. Literally, as we record, just saw a video of him arriving to the United States for the draft. It's a phenomenon, larger than life. The hype, man. When you think about the hype around Victor Wembanyama and other drafts that we've covered in the past and just we've watched in the past as a fan, where does this measure up for you?
I mean, this is going to be, I was the first ever NBA draft I attended in person was the Zion Williamson draft in 2019. Yeah. That was an incredible experience for myself as someone who has been following the draft ever since I was like 8 years old, watching every single pick. Yeah. So to be able to be in the building for that moment in that, you know, kind of the next prospect since LeBron James, biggest prospect since LeBron James, and just seeing the way that the crowd reacted and the energy in the building, like you really felt like you were witnessing something very special. And I'm not going to be in the building on Thursday for Victor Wembanyama, but I have a feeling that that is almost going to be tenfold is probably a lot because Zion was just such a, like just a massive prospect on the social media scene in the United States, whether it's YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. And then again at Duke just highlights every single time he stepped on the floor. So I don't want to call it tenfold, but I actually feel like almost like five times like the hype around Victor Wembanyama and the energy that's going to be in that building, people are really going to be able to appreciate the idea that like, if this guy stays healthy, they could end up seeing, you know, one of the greatest prospects in NBA history. And, you know, I mean, after the season that he just had over in France, where he took home every award possible, I mean, his team came up short in the finals against a team that was loaded with other NBA prospects, not NBA prospects, former NBA players, NBA veterans. Jordan Lloyd, I mean, Monte Yunus, I mean, Mike James, like that team, team is absolutely loaded. But you know, Victor Wembanyama is a special, special talent. The hype is worth it. If he stays healthy, he's going to be, you know, one of the best players in the NBA for, you know, the foreseeable future. And I cannot wait to see him step foot on the floor. It sounds like he'll play in summer league a little bit to quote him. He said that after the game. So, you know, we might be able to see him get his first NBA action in you know, the next week and a half here.
Yeah, you know, so talking about Zion and thinking about, you know, LeBron and thinking about a lot of other number one picks we've seen over at the Sporting News, me and our colleague Micah Adams, we kind of put our heads together and had our own all-time draft based on pre-draft hype. And we only picked number one picks because obviously those guys were the most hyped. That's why they went number one. We had Vic at four. Won't spoil the rest of the list for you guys. Head over to Sporting News and check that out. But one was LeBron. Two was Kareem. Three was Shaq. And then Victor Wembanyama right there. Do you think that's fair? Or would you maybe slide him up a little bit?
Damn, I'm honestly shocked that Tim Duncan didn't go before it. Like I thought you would have taken Tim Duncan over Victor Wembanyama.
I thought about it. It was not on brand for me to go against that. He ended up going again. I said no more spoilers. He ended up going six. I actually went Bill Walton before Tim Duncan. So okay, no more spoilers after that. But that was. I mean, it's such an esteemed list. You really can't pick wrong when you talk about those guys. But
no, exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, that sounds about right. I mean, if this guy, again, if he stays healthy, like we're talking about a player that could win multiple MVPs, defensive player of the years, you know, he'll enter that upper echelon alongside who? Giannis, Hakeem, and Michael Jordan is the only players who win MVP and DPOY in the same year. Like that's the level of prospect that we're talking about here. I mean, he's someone that can step out on the perimeter and knock down threes, but also just average like almost three blocks a game underneath the paint. So, you know, protecting the rim there. So, I mean, he's something that we've never seen before. He is like the first, you know, true mix of like that big man that has grown up being able to like play on the perimeter, shoot threes right. without anybody telling him not to, because that's just kind of today's day and age. And, you know, maybe sometime down the line, we'll see more 7-footers that are almost like, you know, small forwards, like Victor Wembanyama is, but you know, right as of right now, we've never seen anything like this before.
I think when you talk about his hype and you mentioned the Zion draft, and I think about LeBron and Kareem a little bit, obviously I was 25 years before I was born, but knowing what I've known about all of these prospects, not as a player, but like the hype machine surrounding Wembanyama is really like a combination of all those things, right? Like I remember I first saw him like 3 years ago, he was like 15, 16 years old playing threes with Rudy Gobert. And I was like, yo, who is this 15-year-old kid that's like the same height as Rudy Gobert? And so he had the concept of being a viral sensation, something we've never seen before, but also being overseas. So there's that level of kind of curiosity of us wanting to know, like, can he actually be that? And I think about like his height at such a young age, because that's what I've heard about Kareem when he was a prospect, you know, coming out of high school in New York before going to UCLA and just being the greatest basketball, college basketball player, you know, we've ever seen. And Bill Walton being second, which is why I had him up there, 3-time National Player of the Year, which is pretty nuts. But that being said, we know what's happening at one. And I think for a lot of us, we say that the draft starts at two. By the time you hear this, the pick might have been made. So we won't talk about what the Hornets should do. But I guess just taking a look at the tail of the tape with Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson, kind of projecting where you see them fitting in. I guess let's just say year one, because it's so hard to, you know, you take things into account as their career goes on. But thinking about what a team will get from day one with those guys, why the Pelicans are so enamored with Scoot Henderson, and who knows, they might get him. But, you know, what these guys will be when they come to the league.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with Scoot Henderson, because I still, you know, feel like he is, I'm going to say head and shoulders, the second best prospect in this draft class. I'm very sure of that. I'm banking on the work ethic. I'm banking on the competitive demeanor, you know, just his attitude, how much basketball means to him. He's an incredibly talented player, an explosive athlete. He already looks like he is like, you know, built like an NBA veteran, even though he's only 19 years old. You know, the physicality, he doesn't shy away from contact, knockdown mid-range shooter, budding playmaker. He's someone that, you know, if you put the ball in his hands as the lead guard, and you know, that might not be the case if he does get drafted by the Hornets next to LaMelo Ball, but you know, he's someone that is ready to run an NBA offense, from day one. I think he has the potential to have, you know, kind of a Ja Morant level ascension to being one of the better guards in the NBA, just because I'm banking on his work ethic so hard. I really like Scoot Henderson. I think he's going to thrive in any situation you put him in, because he is a combo guard. He can play on or off the ball and make it work, even though he is more of a true point guard, if you're, you know, leaning one side or the other. And then there's Brandon Miller, who has a case as the best shooter in this draft class. I mean, he shot 40% from 3-point range, and he was taking a lot of threes a game. You know, he has the versatility to defend multiple positions on the defensive end. I still really believe in Brandon Miller as an NBA player. The only thing with him is that I'm not sure that if you put him on a team, he's ready to be the go-to scorer right away. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I've said this on this podcast before, but he's not like the freak level athlete that you're used to seeing from like a 6'9" wing being drafted this early, you know, potential top three pick. Almost a lock for a top three pick. And then when it comes to like shot creation, you know, he can put the ball on the floor and find ways to find open space and get a shot off, but he's not someone that, you know, 6 seconds left in the shot clock, just give the ball to him and he's going to shake and bake and find a way to free himself up for, you know, this kind of like awesome shot creating, like tough shot making type wing. As of right now, that's not really his game. His handle is there. Like there is potential there with his handle to become an elite shot creator, but that's my only hesitation with Brandon Miller right now. Why I personally have Henderson as the number 2 prospect in this class above him, because I still need to see more from Brandon Miller as a shot creator to become an eventual number 1 scoring option on an NBA team.
No, that makes complete sense, especially when you look at his physical profile. And then, like you said, comparing him to other guys like that in the league, because he's like 6'9", slender frame, but also, you know, kind of has that scoring profile. But does he have, I guess they say, the bag to do that right away, which obviously, depending on where he lands, the player development system, all that stuff will have a hand in that. One last question before we take a quick break. Right now, most odds makers have rookie of the year odds. It's Victor Wembanyama and the field. Do you think that that's given Vic a little too much credit? And like the field also has Chet Holmgren in it, by the way. So do you think that, you know, it maybe is worth taking a long, hard look at the field, or is it Vic's award to lose?
I actually, like, if I was betting on this, I would take the field 100% because the odds, I don't know. I don't have the odds in front of me. I haven't looked at the odds. I'm sure they are heavily favored to Vic. I don't know if you have them in front of you.
I know.
If I were to guess, I'm just going to throw a random number out there. I'm going to say like minus 180 or like minus 200 probably for Vic. And that's a lot of money to put down on a guy who, you know, if the Spurs are not in contention, they may just shut him down. And Victor is super competitive. Like as we saw, he played all the way to the final buzzer in his French Pro League when he really could have folded in whenever he wanted because he was a lock for the number one pick. And he's so competitive that he decided to keep playing and try and compete for a championship. So I don't think he would want to do that. And I do think, I've said this before, I think he's going to be in the mix to be a first-time All-Star. He's going to have the Spurs in the mix to be a play-in team. I really, truly believe that as long as they put the right pieces around him in free agency to kind of compete right away. But, you know, if in terms of betting just for the juice that you're going to get on taking the field, there's so many other talented prospects. And if Vic decides, or if the Spurs decide to shut him down after however many games, then the field is, you know, kind of, I mean, that's an open bet at that point. Absolutely, so, you know, I'm no betting expert, but that's kind of where I'm at.
I don't know what the exact number you threw out there, but I just looked it up as of last Tuesday. It's Wembanyama minus 178, the field plus 136. So I think that was pretty close to exactly.
Yeah, it was pretty close. I said minus 180.
So there you go, right there, right? That's literally right there. That being said, you mentioned some other prospects, and we'll get into those prospects after a quick break. Have a couple of superlatives, rookies most likely too. So catch you after the break. All right, now we're focusing forward to the upcoming season, and we talked a lot about Victor Wembanyama, and Kyle has already said you wouldn't be surprised if he could win MVP and Defensive Player of the Year in the same season. So a lot of these rookie superlatives, Victor Wembanyama is probably the rookie most likely to do a lot of these things first. So we'll take him out of the equation for this exercise and focus on the rest of this draft class, starting with the rookie that you think of these guys will be the first to make a All-Star team.
And right off the bat, I'm going to go with my guy, Scoot Henderson, because again, I just think like in terms of being NBA ready in the physicality and already spending 2 years with the G League Ignite and getting a feel for, you know, NBA systems and scouting and, you know, film review and work at like just, you know, workouts and everything like that. Like, I feel like he's a step ahead of the field. You know, of course, aside from Victor Wembanyama. So I'm going to go with Scoot Henderson as the player who I believe in this draft class will be the first All-Star aside from Wemby.
I think I know it gets like kind of overplayed, but that it factor that he has too. Like when he went and they played head to head, Scoot and Victor in Vegas, and you were there, you know, you could just see in Scoot's eyes that like, okay, I'm proving that I'm right on the same level as this guy. And I could see him kind of having that same type of confidence every time he steps on the floor throughout his rookie season and beyond. Now, we talked All-Star, let's talk Defensive Player of the Year. Who do you think it projects as the best defender among these guys in the draft class?
Again, we're going to go aside from Victor Wembanyama, who, like I said, could probably average 2.5 blocks a game as a rookie. I like Jairus Walker out of Houston.
Okay.
Just because he's so, again, the physicality is there. The athleticism is there as, you know, a power forward. He has the mobility to switch out and defend on the perimeter. My player comparison for him was Sean Marion. I just love the idea that, you know, he's someone that can step outside on the perimeter, knock down three. I know that has nothing to do with Defensive Player of the Year, but just talking about his player profile at this point. You know, he has a little bit of playmaking prowess to him. But in terms of a defender, I mean, he was an anchor for that Houston defense last year. That was one of the best in the nation. He's someone that can block shots at the rim, but also, you know, kind of body up with guys on the block and defend on the perimeter. So if I'm going to pick a Defensive Player of the Year that's not Wemby, it's going to be Jairus Walker.
I think one thing I remember back when we were previewing March Madness, you were really big on Walker back then. So obviously that stayed true. And then thinking about the Sean Marion comparison, thinking about how Aaron Gordon kind of played a Sean Marion role throughout this postseason run for the Nuggets. It's important in a copycat league to see somebody who can do that and try to get your own version of that. So I definitely like that. I think moving forward, I should just say, I should ask first, is it going to be Wemby to be the first person? And then if it's yes or no, we'll go after that. Who would it be after that? Because, you know, the answer might be no for this one. The next one is scoring champ. Do you think Wemby will be the first scoring champ out of this draft class? And if not him, then who? But I guess the twofold question.
I mean, he just led the French league in scoring. So I feel like the answer probably would be Victor Wembanyama again. But again, we're going to keep this one in the top five here, and it's got to be Brandon Miller be the potential guy to lead the league in scoring. When you and I kind of talked about this topic for the show, and I went through this draft class to like try and find like, oh, okay, who could be a guy that's not Brandon Miller? Just to get another name in the mix. But this class doesn't have like the Jalen Green type scorers that some of the draft classes in the past have had that, like, you know, someone that really they are just a through and through prolific scorer. Brandon Miller would kind of be that guy. But again, like, if he doesn't learn to create his own shot and he doesn't improve that ball handling to become more of a shot creator and shot maker, then, you know, he won't be the type of guy that's going to lead the league in scoring. But I do think that he will eventually improve those skills and be the type of guy that's averaging 25 points per game.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, sometimes, I mean, obviously it's super top heavy with Scoot and Wimby. I think that, like, you know, the questions around other players or flaws or whatever it is make people think that this draft isn't necessarily that deep. But I think, you know, looking at a lot of the draft stuff that you've done, there is some depth to it. And I think when you look at the guys who were there, there are guys who just fill specific roles. So I think that's the next question I should ask you, not necessarily a person most likely to do something, but more superlative type things. And I guess starting with the playmaking thing, who do you look at as the best playmaker in this draft class?
My favorite playmaker in this draft class is Anthony Black out of Arkansas. 6'8" guard. He's a true guard. Long arms, just very cerebral. Like, he sees the floor. You can't speed him up. His court vision is incredible. He can make every type of pass off of a live dribble. He ran a lot of pick and rolls at Arkansas. He pushes the pace in transition. My player comparison for him was Josh Giddey, because they kind of have a similar profile, a similar build, and even like their weaknesses. Like, Giddey came into the league and his weakness was shooting, but he wasn't afraid to shoot. And that's what I like about Anthony Black as well. Like, perimeter shooting is one of his perceived weaknesses, but he still averaged like over 2 threes a game at Arkansas, three point attempts per game at Arkansas. He's the type of guy who I think he's going to land with the Wizards in the first round. They need a point guard desperately, assuming Chris Paul is going to be moving on. And he's the type of playmaker that, you know, right away, no matter who you put around him, he's going to make everybody around him better.
Yeah, the Giddey stuff is awesome. And we kind of had this conversation. It's like, a guy, Giddey hasn't even been in the league that long. And Anthony Beckley even said it. He, like, kind of watches Giddey and studies his game a little bit. So it's just kind of crazy to hear two young guys that pattern their games off, well, you know, stealing from one another. So it'll be cool to see him do that. I know you said he has a little more athleticism too. So that makes him kind of a scary prospect forever lands him. Now, I guess take it out to the perimeter again. Best shooter in this class, is it Brandon Miller? I know you mentioned his name already. But I guess if it's not him, who else would it be?
I'm not going to go with Brandon Miller here. There's two guys that I actually have neck and neck in this one. It's Grady Dick out of Kansas and Jordan Hawkins out of UConn for different reasons, because Grady Dick is someone that he already has NBA range. There's not a three pointer that he can't knock down. He's 6'8". He has the size on the wing. I think he, you know, if I had to pick one, I would probably go Grady Dick is the best 3-point shooter in this class. But what we saw from Jordan Hawkins in the NCAA tournament was so special. Just the way that he can shoot off movement. And the thing that really impresses me with Jordan Hawkins is that he doesn't even need a split second to get a shot off. If someone's closing out on him, it's like he doesn't even see their hand there. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, and I'm not sure if Instat even has them, but I would love to see what he shot on contested threes this year, because I feel like, you know, he'd have Hall of Fame blinders for anybody that plays 2K as, you know, kind of a playmaking badge. But Grady Dick and Jordan Hawkins, two lights out shooters, and they're two names that I would have a hard time believing they fall out of the lottery just because they're so good at what they do.
Yeah, you mentioned that too. Now, I've seen them like in that lottery range in every mock draft because shooting is so important, which I guess leads right to the next question. The best 3-and-D prospect in this draft, the balance of the shooting, but also can lock up on the perimeter.
I really like Taylor Hendricks, a freshman out of UCF. He's a name that really rose on mock draft boards throughout the year because he shot over 40% from three. He's someone that averaged over two steals plus blocks per game. You know, he has a size. He's 6'9". He has over a 7-foot wingspan. He can defend on the perimeter at a high level. He can also, you know, body up and defend inside. He's someone that, you know, I feel like, again, he's going to be really tough to pass on in that top 10 and in that lottery just because he's really good at shooting and he's really good at defending. And as we've seen, you know, on championship teams, on playoff teams, you cannot have, you know, enough shooting and you cannot have enough versatile defenders. And he's someone that fits both of those bills as, you know, someone that I think right away could make a contributor to a playoff rotation because of his ability to defend and shoot three.
Yeah, a freshman out of UCF. You don't really hear a lot of guys come out of UCF. It'd be the first since Taco Fall a couple years ago, who did all 4 years at UCF, actually almost ended up in Wake Forest, but decided to stay close to home down in Orlando. There's a fun fact for you guys didn't know. He went on an official visit at Wake Forest some years back. Now, I mentioned him being a freshman out of UCF, and I think, you know, a lot of times we see a lot of these young guys Because they have so much potential to grow, those guys go ahead of the older guys. But I think we've seen in years past that a lot of times those guys are finished products, and what you get from them right away is what you will get from them throughout their career. So consistency is something you can bet on with these older guys. What upperclassmen stand out to you in this draft class? I know a couple names kind of stand in mind. One I can think of is Trace Jackson Davis out of Indiana, but is he one of the big names to follow, or are there some other ones as well?
I do really like Trace Jackson Davis. I think he's someone that, like, you could see him mocked anywhere between the late first round and early second round. Mm-hmm. But I would, for one of those teams in the back end of the lottery that have multiple draft picks, Indiana being one of them, the Pacers, but also like a team like Utah or a team like Houston, like they could use someone like Trace Jackson Davis, someone who is, you know, a really good pick and roll player. He can defend multiple positions, solid rim protector, even though he's a little undersized. I just think he's very NBA ready. But one of my favorite names in terms of upperclassmen to keep an eye on, Colby Jones out of Xavier. He's just like kind of that jack of all trades. Like he's almost like, you know, moldable clay. Like he can turn into whatever you need him to be. He can handle the ball and play make for others. He's improved as a 3-point shooter every year that he was at Xavier. He can defend at a high level on the perimeter. He can knock, you know, like I already said, he can knock down catch and shoot threes if you need him to, even though that's not necessarily, you know, kind of his MO or his shining skill set. But he's just somebody, I compare him to like Josh Hart from Villanova. He plays winning basketball. He's going to make the right rotations on defense, be ready to help, get his hands in passing lanes, be able to create for others. He's just a very moldable prospect. I really like him. And then another one is Olivier Maxence Prosper, OMAX, mm-hmm. out of Marquette, who really has kind of risen his draft stock. Started at the combine. He measures really well. A versatile wing. He can defend at a high level. Someone who can defend multiple positions. At the combine in particular, he displayed a little bit of a promise to be able to create off the dribble and create for others, just making, you know, simple reads, extra passes, things like that. And he's another one who, you know, shooting will be his swing skill, but he's already shown that he has improved as a shooter over his years at Marquette. So he's someone that's starting to work his way into becoming almost a solidified first round prospect after, you know, working out for just about every team in the NBA and showing out at the NBA draft combine.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You talk about these older guys and we mentioned just kind of what they bring to the table and what they've just picked up from learning how to play the right way for a few years. And I was curious. I went back to look at your sleepers from last year, and it's perfect. You had Christian Brown out of Kansas. I don't know if you remember that you had him as one of your draft sleepers. I got to give you your flowers right now, because I know a few years ago you had Sadiq Bey as a big sleeper and a player that people would regret passing up on draft night. So your track record with the sleepers speaks for itself, and a lot of times they are upperclassmen. So when you look at this draft class and people who aren't getting as much pub as maybe they should get in this draft class, who are some guys that people should not sleep on in the 2023 draft class?
I'm going to break this down to a couple sections here. I mean, I'll try and keep it brief, but I'm going to start with freshmen in the second round that I think that, you know, they'll fall out of the first round territory, but they're still names to keep an eye on. One is Amari Bailey out of UCLA. Mm-hmm. I'm still a huge fan of his game. He was one of the, top ranked prospects in his high school class this past season, but playing for an upperclassman UCLA team, he didn't really get the opportunity to showcase everything that he can do. I think he can defend at a high level, play make for others. He kind of has a hitch in his jumper, but he still found a way to knock it down this past season. And another one's Jordan Walsh out of Arkansas. He's just someone that has long arms. He defends at a high level. Like, he's super physical. He has really good athleticism, runs the lane hard in transition, knows when to cut. Again, shooting will be his swing skill. In terms of upperclassmen, Jalen Wilson out of Kansas, he was an All-American. I'm sure, you know, if you're listening to this, you've probably heard of him. He doesn't pop up on a lot of mock draft boards, in the early second round, but he's someone that I am so convinced he will find a way to carve out a role in the NBA just because he works so hard. I thought he had the highest motor in college basketball. Every time I watched him, he's all over the place. And another one is Seth Lundy out of Penn State. He's a little bit bigger. He's kind of almost a point forward type. He can play make for others, but he's also just someone that can stand on the perimeter and knock down threes. And he showcased that at the NBA draft combine. And I thought he really helped his draft stock there. And then the last one is a European player, Tristan Vukcevic. He is out of Serbia, super skilled. He can create for himself a little bit. He can shoot from the perimeter. He's 7 feet tall. And, we're sitting here talking about a player that could be in the 40s, a skilled big man out of Serbia. It might sound a little bit familiar, Tristan Vukcevic is someone that, is worth keeping an eye on because he decided to keep his name in the draft. And, it wouldn't surprise me, especially just based on the Jokic stuff, that people decided that some team tries to take a swing on him.
Yeah, it's funny to kind of see like the ups and downs we've seen in the past. Like Porzingis was a hit, and then Dragan Bender goes for the next year or year or kind of not the next year, but in that same time span, you know. So seeing the way, again, like I mentioned, the league being a copycat league, what that kind of means moving forward as far as this draft goes. Now, again, you and I are recording this on Monday, so we are like about 3 days before the draft. But you might be hearing this after the draft goes on. So a lot of things we talk about, a lot of these guys you talk about, you can associate them with teams now. But as we round things up here, you can kind of put the crystal ball out, but also put the GM hat on. Two, three, four, your favorite fits for prospects as far as what they can bring to a team in need. Are there any that stand out more than the others as you go into the draft?
I hope this doesn't count as riding the fence, but right off the bat at number five, the Detroit Pistons, I hope they land either Cam Whitmore or Jairus Walker. Those are two, you know, just super athletic power forwards that fit a need for the Pistons. If either of them are available, I would be shocked if Detroit passed on them. They just fit what they're trying to work with. You know, they feel like they have a center rotation of the future with James Wiseman and Jalen Duren. Obviously, they believe in Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey. But, you know, finding that power forward, I feel like Whitmore or Walker could bring the athleticism that they're looking for in that front court. The Wizards at number eight, Anthony Black. I've already said that. I feel like that is a match made in heaven. Every year when you go through the mock draft boards and you're starting to fill it out, you know, there's the name that just kind of feels like it gravitates towards the same team every single time. And for me, ever since the beginning, that's been Anthony Black to the Wizards because they need a guard. Another one is Taylor Hendricks to the Mavericks. I'm not sure if he's still going to be there. I could see the Pacers reaching for him, you know, as high as seven if they don't land Whitmore or Walker, if one of them doesn't fall, just because I think they could use kind of a big perimeter shooter defender like Taylor Hendricks. But if he's still there for the Mavericks at 10, I love the fit for him next to Luka Doncic and potentially Kyrie Irving. And then the last one, I don't have to go too far in depth on it. I've talked about it on here a million times. Jalen Huccifino to the Raptors. I've seen over the last couple of days, I feel like I've seen a lot of reporting around Kobe Bufkin, the sophomore out of Michigan, to the Raptors. And that's a fit that makes sense as well to me. But I have Huccifino over Bufkin, and I feel like he's the perfect fit for Toronto.
There it is. I know we talked a lot about it in depth last week, specifically with Huccifino and his ability to be in the pick and roll and really kind of be that playmaking guard for the future for a franchise who's similar to the Wizards. I know Fred VanVleet has been in Toronto, but all the writing on the wall kind of makes it seem like he's going to be out of there. So with the new coach, new regime, and starting a new era, bringing a guy like that to kind of be the first face of it to go along with who's already in place, it will make a lot of sense. So, of course, we'll be back after the NBA draft next week to kind of really break it all down, what it means for certain teams, but specifically the Raptors, what they'll do at 13 if they move up from 13 and get active, because I would not be surprised if this Raptors team is active on draft night and really ushers in the new era with the bang. So stick with us at NBA Sound System. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and we will be here with you all throughout the off season, because free agency will be right here before we know it as well. And then we can break down Victor Wembanyama and his summer league debut, which could be coming in Sacramento, could be coming in Vegas, but we'll be here to break it all down. For Kyle Irving, I'm Gil McGregor. Thank you for tuning in to NBA Sound System. We will catch you after the draft next week.